The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. And today I'd like to welcome back to the program Tana French. Her book, The Trespasser, just came out in paperback. She joins us on the telephone from Dublin, Ireland. Hello, Tana.
Hi, Vic. Thank you for having me back on.
And I hate to miss an opportunity to talk to you because I love your stuff, and you take a while between books. You take a couple of years, and I think we had you on for the hardcover of this, and when I talked to you at that time, you were still working on the next book. Is the next book close to completion?
I hope so. I really, really hope so, because otherwise I think my editor is going to start poking me with sticks. But I am still still working away on that book. I think I write long books. I like to hope that, hey, it's not that I'm going slowly. It's just that, you know, they're value for money.
Okay. Let's talk about this series, because this is a little different. Your approach to the series is not a traditional approach. We have a lot of different characters in these books. Let's tell our listeners who aren't familiar with you what the series is about.
It's called the Dublin Murder Squad series, and I think probably more than a series in the classical sense, it's more of a chain-linked series, because in each of the books, apart from the first, the narrator is a detective who was a secondary character in an earlier book. So somebody who's the sidekick or a supporting lead in one book can take center stage in the next. And it's kind of because I like writing about the cases that are central to the detective's, not just his or her career, but his or her life as a person. And so for that, you can't really stick to the same character for more than one book, because no human being gets that many huge, big, defining turning points in his or her life. So moving from one narrator to the next kind of makes sense.
And in The Trespasser, our main character is a detective named Antoinette. Tell us about her.
Antoinette is not a particularly easy person to be. She's tough, she's pretty harsh, she's pretty abrasive, she's good at her job, but she's not very good at playing nicely with others. And that hasn't gone well for her so far in her job in the murder squad. She loves the job, but she got off on the wrong foot. She's done absolutely nothing to remedy that, because she's one of these people who absolutely refuse to give an inch to outside pressure. And so things have spiraled downwards. And at this point, her working life is basically a stream of harassment from her own squad, everything from kind of humiliating pranks through to downright sabotage. And she's not doing anything to fix it, and things are getting worse.
And her partner is a guy named Steve. And they couldn't be more different, could they?
Steve is basically the opposite. He's a people pleaser. He's the kind of guy who gives an inch and then gives a mile. He'll almost turn himself into anything that he thinks other people want to see. And he was the narrator in the previous book, The Secret Place, and they did not get on very well. They were thrown together as partners, the two of them, and Antoinette thought Steve was basically this mushy guy who would be anything that anyone wanted from him, and he thought she was a stroppy cow. But sort of over the course of the book, they started to realize that together they made a pretty good balance, and that they both needed a little of the other one's influence in their lives. So in this book, in The Trespasser, they're partners, but they're pretty new partners. And this partnership is coming under a lot of pressure due to the fact that Steve gets on okay with the rest of the squad, while a lot of them would like to see Antoinette bone.
Tana French joins us. Her book, The Trespasser, has just come out in a paperback. You just referred to her as being a stroppy cow, which I think is indicative of the fact that you're not an American. That's an expression we don't use very often around here.
Oh, crap. Sorry. It means somebody who's always looking for looking for an argument, basically, who's very easily annoyed about things and outraged about things and, yeah, looking for a fight the whole time. Yeah, culture gap, sorry.
I love the expression, Tana. Feel free to use those. In fact,
yeah, borrow it.
Yeah, well, that's one of the beauties of reading your stuff is that we do get that Irish turn of phrase. I mean, we are speaking English to one another, but we have very different forms of expression, don't we?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a hard balance to strike because you don't want to be incomprehensible to your readers, but at the same time, if you're writing a character who's from Dublin, you can't take that away. Like, people just speak differently over here, depending on neighborhood, depending on like social class, depending on age and cultural factors. They just speak differently, and you can't dismiss that entirely. So I try to work it in so that the context makes it clear what I'm talking about. I'm not sure I 100% manage it, but I do my best.
You mentioned that Antoinette is on the outs with her squad, that she's fairly unpopular, and as the book opens, she and Steve have been called in to look at a homicide, and on the face of it, initially, it looks like a fairly routine case, like she's just kind of been put on this case because they don't really want to give her something that interesting. Set this up. Tell us what they find and what's happened.
Well, they get called to a little cottage in a kind of working class but gentrifying area of Dublin. And a young woman, Aisling Murray, it's her home. She lives there alone and she's dead with her head smashed on the fireplace surrounds next to a table that's set for a romantic dinner for two. So, of course, it looks fairly obvious. She had a boyfriend coming over. There was an argument. Things went wrong. He hit her. The end. And that's what they think it is at first. They're not particularly pleased because while this kind of case does make for an easy solve and it gives you good numbers, of course, everybody in the squad knows that no detective work went into it. So there's no prestige, there's no kudos. And Antoinette desperately needs something that will move her up the hierarchy within the squad and prove that she's a good enough detective to stick around. But gradually, as they investigate, they start to realize that somebody within their own squad is in a really big hurry for them to arrest the boyfriend, close the case, move on. And they have to figure out, is that just police laziness, keep the figures up, or is it part of what Antoinette feels is a real conspiracy to get her out of the squad? Is it somebody trying to make her make a huge mistake so that she'll be booted off the murder squad, or is there something deeper going on?
Tana French joins me on the program. Her book is The Trespasser. You mentioned this police officer who wants to get this case solved and filed away as quickly as possible. That would be Breslin, right?
Oh, yeah. Breslin's a lot of fun to write, actually, because he's very smooth, very smarmy. He's the golden boy. He walks into a room and everybody thinks he's great. And it's only if you observe him for a while that you start to realize that he may not be quite as amazing as he's trying to convince himself and everybody else. And he's essentially set by the superintendent. He's essentially sent to babysit the two of them, which doesn't make Antoinette and Steve happy because they don't feel that they need babysitting. But then they start to wonder why exactly he's been set to babysit them and why exactly he is in quite such a hurry to get this case closed. And, of course, he's more experienced than they are. He is much better at bamboozling people, confusing people, throwing red herrings in right and left. He is much better at all the tricks of detectivehood than they are, so they're scrambling to keep up.
The murder victim,
Aisling.
Aisling. She's a beautiful young woman, and as they delve into her past, they discover something rather amazing about her. She has completely remade herself.
Yeah, she's reinvented herself where she was a very kind of stay-at-home, dowdy, frumpy, quiet young woman. Over the last year or so, year or two, she's transformed herself into this confident, glamorous, almost a Barbie doll. And at first, Antoinette doesn't have a lot of time for that because she really doesn't like people who think they have to turn themselves into something else in order to be worthy of anyone else's attention or liking or respect, because she's very hardcore about not shifting herself one inch in order to meet other people's expectations. But as they peel away the layers of the case, it becomes clear to them that Ashton was not doing this just in order to be more attractive or anything like that. She had a very clear agenda. She felt that at some point in her past, somebody had tried to basically co-opt her life, rewrite her life in order to fit their own needs and their own desires. And this, recreating herself, was an attempt to take back that control and do a bit of rewriting of her own.
Now we're getting into the psychology of these people, of these characters, and you love that part. Obviously, this is somewhat of a whodunit, because we don't really figure out until the end who really committed the murder, and it's a kind of a big shock. But you're not so much about the whodunit, are you?
No, I'm not. I don't think that's ever the core mystery of any of my mysteries. One article, Laura Miller, wrote something about how the question for me is never who's the murderer, it's more who is the detective. And I love that, because I don't think anybody's ever put their finger more on what I'm trying to do. And that hopefully means that at least some of the time I'm getting it right. Because to me, that's much more fascinating, is who are... People are more mysterious than any act. A person has more intricacies and more mysteries and more depth than any single act. And so that's what I'm trying to explore, is at heart, who is the detective, and when under pressure, when under the huge pressure of a murder investigation that kind of crosses that boundary between personal and professional, that draws the detective into it as a person, not just as a professional detective, who is this person deep down? That's what I'm interested in.
And your detective, Antoinette, is sort of an outcast in her squad, and she's also an outsider in Ireland, isn't she? Her background is mysterious.
Yeah, her background is mysterious. Her father left her mother before Antoinette was born, and her mother has refused ever to give her a straight story about who he was. It's obvious that to Antoinette, it's obvious that he wasn't white. He was something that could have been possibly Middle Eastern, possibly South American, possibly North African. Her mother won't give her any kind of answer again. So she has no idea about that, but it does mark her out, because Ireland is pretty diverse now. But up until even 20 years ago, it really wasn't. It was like 99.99% white Irish-born people. So Antoinette, being mixed race, would have stood out big time in Ireland, the Ireland where she was growing up. And to her, that's had a big effect, but not necessarily in the way you'd think. It hasn't made her long to find her father and find out her story. While she did want that as a child, and her mother came up with a wide variety of stories, none of which turned out to be true, she's decided now that she refuses to allow that to be a factor in her life, who he was, why he left, where he's from. She's refusing to allow that any space in her life at all. But it's only in the course of the book that she realizes that it's not quite that simple, and that in ways that she wasn't aware of, she has in fact been allowing his absence to define the way she interacts with the world, and that needs to change.
In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. Tana French joins us on the program today, and we invite her back to talk about The Trespasser, which just came out in paperback. She joins us on the telephone from Dublin, Ireland. Okay. Antoinette clearly has some issues about her father. Can we talk about the fact that Eslin also has some daddy issues?
Yeah, the two of them, the detective and the victim, in a lot of ways there are parallels. Both of them have absent fathers, although Antoinette's vanished before she was born, whereas Aisling's disappeared one day when she was 10. But they've dealt with it in what seems at first, at least, to be opposite ways. Aisling basically let her, that day when her father went missing, rewrite her whole life. That's defined who she is, what she does, everything about her life. It is the controlling force in the narrative of her life. Whereas Antoinette believes, at least, that her father being gone has had absolutely no effect on who she is and what she does. But again, in the course of the book, she is kind of forced to confront that it may not be quite as simple as that.
We spend a lot of time in this book with the boyfriend. He gets questioned and interrogated quite a bit. He looks like he's good for the crime. He's an important character, yet we're kind of spinning our wheels with this guy. Let's talk about the boyfriend. He's kind of a weird guy, but it seems like he really loved Aisling.
He's an odd guy. His name's Rory. He is a bookseller, and he's kind of quite vague and dreamy, but he was absolutely enchanted by Aisling to a point that the detectives at first think may not have been healthy and may have led to him killing her, whether accidentally or on purpose, they're not sure, because to him, she was a starting point for all kind of amazing fantasies, all kind of stories he came up with in his head about the wonderful things they could do together and the life they could live together. And he hadn't known her very long, and yet all these stories are generated for him by that relationship. And to a large extent, that's kind of what the book's about, is the stories that we create about our own lives, the narratives that we overlay on our lives, and how we deal with it when those narratives don't quite match up with the reality, whether we bring the narrative in tune with the reality or whether we try to force the reality to fit the narrative. And Rory was so drawn into his own fantastical narrative that their initial instinct is that when that narrative drove up against reality, he couldn't handle it and he ended up killing Aisling. But over the course of the book, it starts to come out that although he was actually even deeper into his fantasy dreams than they first realized, those aren't necessarily malignant. He's actually able to deal with the odds conflict between those and reality better than they thought. And who they're looking for is not necessarily somebody who is a dreamer and into his fantasy narratives. It's someone who thought they were well in tune with reality and had a much harder time handling it when they found out they weren't.
Mm. Tana French joins us. Her book, The Trespasser, just came out in paperback. It's the most recent Dublin Murder Squad book. And Tana, you just mentioned how we create our own narratives. Looking at you, I'm wondering what your narrative is. You've had a very interesting life so far. How did you become a writer?
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I did want to be a writer even when I was a little kid. I've always loved words. I've always loved books. But I kind of got sidetracked. I ended up falling absolutely in love with acting as a teenager and going into acting for a good long time. And that was the plan, was to stick with acting. But I had the idea for In the Woods when I was, I think, 30. And I really liked this idea, my first book, In the Woods. I really liked this idea, and I wanted to find out what would happen next to this character, how this mystery would play out. And, of course, nobody else was going to write it for me. So I figured I probably couldn't write an entire book. I had never tried to before, but I could probably write a scene and then maybe another scene and then a chapter. And then the next thing I knew, I was turning down acting work in order to try and finish this book. And if you know any actors, they do not turn down work. They are always looking for more work. So I think that was the moment when I realized that I was really very serious about this whole writing thing. And it kind of snowballed from there. I got very lucky.
I have had a number of authors on the program who hail from Ireland, Scotland, England, and some of them have been able to find a lot of readership in the United States. Others have not been quite so fortunate. I interview a lot of American writers, and I ask them who some of their favorite writers are. And your name, frequently comes up from American writers. So it sounds to me like you've built up a pretty decent readership over here.
I hope so. I feel really, really lucky because the books do, in fact, do better in America than they do over here in Ireland and than they do in the UK. I've thought a lot about why it is, and I wonder if it's because Americans are used to stuff not fitting neatly into a genre, because Americans create so many new genres. They're constantly creating new genres, new subgenres on TV and film. A lot of the new categories spring from America. And my books, especially when they were first coming out, fit neatly into any subgenre. Now there are more and more writers doing kind of psychological, mystery, literary, crime, mm-hmm. something. But 10 years ago when my stuff was first coming out, it didn't really fit neatly into a category. And I think American readers don't seem to have any problem with it. They seem to be very, very open to the idea of just new subgenres springing up like mushrooms overnight. And I think that might be one reason why my books have found more of a home in the U.S. than over here.
I think the first time I had you on the program was for your book, Broken Harbor, and a big part of that story was the collapse of a lot of the economy in Ireland, these empty housing projects that were never finished. Have things improved over there?
Ooh, that's kind of a complicated one to answer because the economy is definitely improving. House prices are going up again, rents are skyrocketing. But I don't think it would be accurate to say that things have improved for everybody or even for the vast majority. I mean, there's a huge housing crisis still. We have all these empty houses, and yet we have so many people who can't find homes. And I think we're in serious danger of making exactly the same mistakes again. And it's terrifying to watch as house prices balloon, rents balloon, people are throwing money into houses that haven't even been built yet, money they don't have. It's a little bit terrifying to watch because we saw this cycle happen so recently, and yet so many people in power seemed either to have forgotten or to have stopped caring where it can lead. It's kind of scary.
And it must be kind of a strange thing with this looming Brexit that the two Irelands are going to be kind of separated again, aren't they?
Nobody really knows. I think Brexit is one of those things that people voted for without actually having thought through what it was going to mean in concrete terms. And now nobody's quite sure what's going to happen. Like, nobody has any clue what it's going to mean for Ireland, for Northern Ireland, for the UK. We're feeling our way in the dark. And it's strange times. It really is.
Well, we could say the same thing over here. My guest is Tana French. Her book is The Trespasser. It just came out in paperback. When we had you on for the hardcover, I asked you about the ending. I love the ending. I love the scene, which I'm not going to describe, where we're thinking that maybe the killer is going to get away with it. There's a meeting that takes place. And I remember talking to you about that, and you mentioned that that particular scene, you had kind of hit a wall, and you really didn't know where to go, and you got a little help with that.
Yeah, this is the one scene that people have mentioned to me repeatedly from this book, and I always have to admit that it wasn't my idea. I feel kind of embarrassed, because I had hit a wall. I had reached the point where I needed a certain character to reveal information that they had, and yet I knew that my narrator, Antoinette and Stephen, they were never going to be able to get this information out of this character. They just wouldn't. It wasn't in character. There was no way that character would give them that info. And I was going around in circles for ages. And finally, I grabbed my husband, who isn't a writer and doesn't even read all that much fiction, but who has a demon eye for structure. He's a film guy. He's a director and an actor, and he has a really good eye for structure and how things fit together. I said, come on, let's go out for lunch and you can fix my problem. So I told him the situation I got myself into. And before we even managed to get our food in, he said, like a shot, he said, oh, I know who solves that for you, and named the character who would get the information. And he was absolutely right. And the weird thing was that it was kind of seeded throughout the book. There were elements throughout the book that implied that this was going to happen. And yet I hadn't recognized them, and he recognized them like a shot. And now the one scene that everybody seems to like in this book is not, in fact, my idea.
Was he actually reading it as you went along, or did he just listen to what you said and then provide a solution?
No, he's my first editor. He reads, okay, as I go along. He reads every chapter as I've got it finished and kind of gives it a good shave and a haircut and a kick in the right direction. He's very good, again, structurally. He's the guy who'll go, hang on a second, you've overused that setting, or you're losing that character for too long. That kind of things about shape. Structure isn't my strong point. I'm good on character, again, coming from an acting background, I think helps, but structure is the bit that I've had to work really hard to try and up my game.
Do you then help him out with his film work?
I do, yeah. He's written a couple of short films. He's just finished filming one there. And I do, I like the moments when we get to swap around and I get to help him out instead and go, oh, no, that's not the word you need there. Hang on, give me 2 minutes, I'll find the word. And then you're coming back to him and going, I found the word you need. It's nice to be able to help him out in exchange because he's done a lot for these books.
Tana French joins us. Her book, The Trespasser, just came out in paperback. Tana, when I had you on for the hardcover, you also mentioned the next book that you were working on, which was a year ago, and earlier in the interview you mentioned that you have these secondary characters that then come to the fore in later books in this series. I think I recall you saying in the previous interview that your main character in this book you're working on is going to be somebody new that hasn't been in a previous book. Did I hear that right?
Yes, yeah. I'm doing something a little different this time. Normally, my main characters, they've all been detectives, and most of them have had some kind of like damage or trauma or something unresolved in their pasts. And this guy is the narrator. It's still first person, and there still is a murder in there because I'm not sure I know how to write a book without like throwing a dead body in there somewhere to get the action going. But this guy is not a detective, and he's not like traumatized or damaged in any way. He's a young, happy guy who's led a happy, peaceful life until one night a couple guys break into his apartment and beat him up pretty badly. And he's left mentally more than physically in really bad shape. And while he's still trying to pull himself out of the wake of all this damage, he finds himself in the middle of a cold case, a murder investigation. And he has to figure out not just like how he wound up there, but also what he's going to do about it.
Well, I'll look forward to that when it finally gets finished. Tana French has been my guest. Her book is The Trespasser. I have just one more question, Tana. What's the last really good book you read?
You know, I keep coming back to Donal Ryan, The Spinning Heart, which has to be one of the last amazing books I read. If you want great writing about Ireland and what it's been through over the last 10 years or so, Donal Ryan is your man. It's set in a small town in Ireland as the Celtic Tiger, the economic boom, crashes, and it's told in a series of different voices. And it's funny, it's dark, it's moving, it's powerful, it's all kinds of things all at once, and it is brilliant. Everyone should read it.
Thanks, Tana. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to be on.
For the Book Nook, it's Tana French, The Trespasser, just out in paperback. I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for listening.